Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone. In today's episode, we're going to talk about something really timely again, because right now, as we know, we're stuck in a pandemic. A lot of us are stuck at home. We're reaching for alcohol, for junk food. We may be binge watching Netflix or different movies while we pig out. And if we're doing all of that, our weight will probably start to creep up. I know we can feel helpless during this time, but we want to help to empower you to make simple changes, behavioral changes that can really impact your weight in a good way and get you feeling healthy, energized, and your best during this time. So today we're going to talk about, you know, looking at portion control, you know, snacking, should you do it, should you not? We're going to delve into habits and how that will really impact our success in terms of weight loss goals. We'll touch on sleep and stress and how that's key to maintain healthy weight. What types of exercise are important to help balance cortisol and to keep you healthiest during this time? We'll look at why do we eat? Is it actually hunger or are there other triggers? And then how food sensitivities and a leaky gut may be impairing your ability to lose weight. If you didn't listen last week, we talked about the hormonal triggers that make it hard to lose weight. It's not just about calories in versus calories out. There's a lot going on behind the scenes. So if you missed that episode, go back and listen if you want more of the science behind why we gain weight, especially as we're getting older. So, Dr. Toni, it's good to be back with you today. I hope you're hanging in there over in Calgary. I'm glad we get to talk. I always feel energized and boosted up after we record these episodes. So I'm grateful that we have this outlet and this time to connect. But let's talk about portion control. So what do we want to say about that?
For sure, Lisa. Well, it's funny because, you know, especially, you know, the last episode that we had where we were talking about kind of the hormones, we talked a lot about blood sugar control. And I found that my first instinct when I did my grocery shop, when you know, things were starting to get things were starting to go down in terms of the, you know, the time that we're in right now, and I knew that I needed to you know, get some groceries and some supplies, my first instinct was to pick up a lot of snacks and to pick up a lot of like my favorite kind of snacky foods. And yet, while, you know, weight and metabolism isn't just all about calories in, calories out, we do need to really look at the kind of foods that we're eating. When you are taking in calories, it really is the best to get the most nutrient-dense food. And maybe, you know, those quinoa chocolate chip cookies aren't necessarily the most nutrient-dense food, and again, throwing off blood sugar balance too. So, I mean, that's definitely something to really look at, you know, what foods you're choosing in terms of having, you know, a nice balance of our macronutrients, you know, complex carbohydrates and proteins and fats and fiber. And again, looking at vegetables and fruit and that kind of thing. And also really looking at portion control. And, you know, this was, you know, a real key for me, not only now, but even when I was looking at my postpartum weight and things were kind of at a standstill, one of the things I really had to look at was how much food am I really eating? And I know this is something that you've mentioned before too. So, you know, I really had to look at, okay, not only what foods am I putting in my mouth, how much am I eating? Am I really, you know, eating more than I need to really feel satiated and full, more can I, you know, can I really, you know, eat a smaller amount? So, you know, something to really kind of look at is, you know, to make sure that you're using smaller plates. And especially those of us who are in relationships with our male partners, especially if they're cooking and serving up the food, they tend to give us the same kind of portion that they eat. Whereas I don't need to eat as much of food as my partner does. So that's really something to look at too, making sure that, you know, we don't eat as much as your male counterparts in the house too. Also, you know, back to snacks and really, you know, is it really beneficial to be eating snacks? You know, there is kind of that idea, I don't know where it came into play back in the 90s or even the turn of the millennium, but that idea of like eating six small meals a day as beneficial for our metabolism and our weight loss. Research and science is really, really kind of discounting that idea, especially when we're talking about blood sugar balance, insulin release. We're really seeing that our body really thrives off of having times of fasting. So going back to the idea of, you know, three set meals a day without snacks in between is really looking like a better way of eating than the six small meals a day. So that can really help to reduce, you know, insulin resistance getting out of control, blood sugar balance getting out of control. So
I have a theory about how that came into play.
Yeah, sure.
So my theory, well, everything went low fat, right? Fat was bad, low fat. So everything was loaded up with carbs and sugar, and you're going to be hungry 2 hours after eating cereal for breakfast, after eating a bagel for a snack. And I don't know about you, but I went on the bagel diet in university and I was like, oh, bagels, muffins, those are healthy. I got to avoid the eggs and the fat. I gained the freshman 15 just like that. Granted, you know, there was a lot more alcohol involved too, but my blood sugar was dipping every hour or two and I felt like I needed that chocolate chip muffin or I needed that bagel. And I had the impression that it was healthy. So if we're eating a well-rounded meal with healthy protein, healthy fat, you know, complex carbohydrates from starchy vegetables or a little bit of fruit, we're going to stay fuller longer and our blood sugars aren't going to dip. So that's my little theory. And then it's a whole total marketing ploy, right? They're going to sell a lot more food and packaged foods if people are eating six times a day.
Of course, Lisa, that's totally it. I think you're really onto something there. Definitely. So, you know, that especially when we're hanging out at home and our routine is thrown off, something to really consider is to really get back to a set meal time and more of a routine so that you can say to yourself, okay, no, it's not time to eat now. And when you are eating and having a meal, making sure that, you know, like Dr. Lisa was just saying, that you're really having those healthy fats, fiber, protein to make sure that you're really feeling satiated. If you are going to have maybe a bit of a treat or a snack after a meal, you know, maybe not every single day, but if, you know, something that I often do is, you know, to have more of a treat on the weekend instead of weekdays. But when I do that, really something that I've switched in terms of my behavior is, you know, when I'm having a chocolate bar or some chips, that I'm actually taking a smaller serving of it, I'm putting it in a bowl or putting it on a plate and not just digging into the bag of chips.
Really great tip, Tony. Yeah. Because so many of us can just take the bag, take the chocolate bread. I'm sure you're a, you know, dark chocolate or your chips are like the bean chips, but it's still, if you eat too much of those, it's still going to be a problem, right? So
absolutely,
keeping it to a limited size is definitely key.
Yeah. And yeah, in the past I have been known to, you know, really, you know, crush a bag of chips pretty easily. So.
I know. It's the salt, the sugar, and the fat, right? They have the perfect like crisp and saltiness. It's made to make us addicted to it. So, absolutely, you know, it's partly our fault, but there's a lot of science to keep us addicted and eating the whole bag.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our brain is craving it. It's saying like, yes, that's fuel for me. Give it to me, but it doesn't really need it. Another, something else that I really had to look at, especially kind of being postpartum, is, and especially once, Frankie started eating food, is, you know, I tend not to like to waste food. So oftentimes if she has leftover food, I will eat it. And I really recognize that if I'm going to do that, I cannot have a really take a full serving of my meal. I'm going to take an even smaller serving of my meal, knowing that I'm going to also be eating her food too, so that I'm not necessarily eating like 1.5 meals. So
that can happen to so many of us, right? It's like, especially when they're really young and you're making them different food and they're like not eating it or not eating much. It's like, oh, I'll just finish that and I'll have my regular meal.
Absolutely right. So those are definitely some things to consider in terms of portion control. When it comes to kind of even snacking and having those set meal times and even avoiding that, that tendency for the evening snacking, I really have the tendency for that to happen. Something to consider is to look at trying out a little bit of intermittent fasting or time-restricted eating. So, you know, while we're not going to really delve into what that is all about in this episode, you know, something to even consider would be to look at starting with 12 hours between supper and your first meal of the next day, your breakfast. You know, there is research showing that even with a 12 or 13 hour fast, that even in a nurse's study decreased the risk of breast cancer overall. So you're going to get more benefits with doing that, with overall health, with your immune system, with your gut health. And that also then gives you a reason to not, you know, reach for a snack in the evening.
Mm-hmm. I think those time limits are so key. Like I really stop eating by 7 at night and then I don't eat breakfast till about 7 in the morning. And I have a breakfast that keeps me full, chia pudding. I actually don't need much. It's about a quarter of a cup and I add in some collagen powder, a tablespoon of flaxseed. There's the chia seed in there, a little bit of almond milk. That keeps me full for 5 hours. I used to have like a significantly larger amount for breakfast. And just talking about the portion control, I still wasn't hungry at around lunch eating that breakfast. So I started to just reduce the amount and see, okay, when will I get hungry around lunch? How much do I need to keep me full in the morning? So even looking at if you're eating regular meals, like, oh, this is what I eat every day for lunch. Well, you can experiment with the amount you're having and see how long you stay full for, or bumping up the protein, reducing the carbs a little bit. You can tweak things there and then having that at least a 12-hour overnight fast and then maybe 4 or 5 hours between meals. If you're satiated and you're not getting low blood sugar, that can be beneficial because then your body's burning your fat stores and not just constantly burning the food you're putting in. So we can think about it like the embers of a fire. If you're constantly putting logs on the fire, your body's just, or the fire's going to burn those logs. So if you're constantly putting food in your body's just going to burn that food for energy. But if you have those fasting periods, you will get to the fat stores or the embers of the fire. Those will burn down. So I kind of like that analogy to explain why do we benefit from fasting, and then it favors our insulin, it gets reduced, our growth hormone increases, so our body's more in build and repair mode.
That's awesome. Yeah. And sometimes I even like to kind of delay the time that I have breakfast so that I'm not necessarily eating as soon as I get up with something like a tea or an elixir or even just again with a whole bunch of, you know, lemon water to really kind of, you know, fill my stomach a little bit, but delay how long or delay the time before I take food in again.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because a lot of us are trained to eat right away. Like, I don't know if you guys have heard before, but I'm an earlier riser. So I'm up at 5:30. So I do my workout. I might do some work or a little bit of housework, and then I'll have breakfast once Stuart's up with me. So it could be 7:30. So you don't have to eat the second you wake up.
Yeah. And that way, I mean, especially if anyone is wanting to kind of play around with intermittent fasting, then you can kind of start slow and then even look at building up to longer periods of time, the more you can kind of delay in the morning too. So that's an idea. I've definitely seen different posts of people on social media who are taking this opportunity to, you know, kind of do a detox cleanse, go sugar-free, or even do fasting. And especially if they've already done fasting, looking at kind of more longer periods of fasting. I wouldn't necessarily recommend anyone jumping into more than a 12 or 16 hour fast to start with. But again, if you have a history of that, and your body does well with it, great. But you know, it is about looking at, okay, can you take this opportunity to really kind of clean things up with the food that you're eating, and so that you can kind of get some benefits, and it already kind of sets into motion a habit or routine where you are not reaching for those foods that are, empty calories or aren't as nutrient dense.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. Using that time to have like a health focused intention. Cause sometimes people just give up at this time. They're like, I'm helpless. I'm just going to eat my comfort food. I'm going to drink my wine. I'm going to eat my chocolate. But you know, if we can switch that and turn it around and incorporate those healthy changes, will really impact our waistline for sure. And our mental health and energy levels.
Absolutely. Especially once you have a habit going, then you're less reliant on your willpower. Because I don't know about you, Lisa, but my willpower sucks.
Oh, I think everybody's does. Great. I think it's, yeah. We don't want to have to rely on that. Definitely not. Making a decision every time. Do I have the chocolate? Do I not? Do I have the wine? Do I not?
It's exhausting. And eventually we just give in. But if you're already in the mindset of, no, that's something that I'm not taking in right now, then it is easier to leave it behind. And even, you know, as things shift, you may be able to transfer that when you're kind of back at the workplace, because I know workplaces are tough sometimes when, you know, you're in a common area and it's someone's birthday and there's cake or there's donuts or that kind of thing. It's like, it's easier to avoid those if you're already in the routine and habit of not taking them in and you've already made that decision.
Yeah, I think that's key for me. I set limits. So I'll be like, okay, well, I'm only going to have two drinks, two nights a week on the weekends. And I'm going to limit my chocolate to Saturday and Sunday. Although lately I've been having a little bit of chocolate every day, but I'm trying to limit it to, you know, a certain number of squares. So I have to be conscious of that. Mm-hmm. And then really, yeah, like Tony said, saving the treats for certain times, or just having that not as a daily thing, but just something you kind of look forward to. So you set up these parameters ahead of time, so you're not constantly like, maybe tonight I'll have a glass of wine, or maybe today I'll finish that chocolate bar. So you don't have to make those small decisions.
For sure, because you know, our bodies really thrive off of routine. For our body to kind of know what's going on and have a set schedule, that really reduces some of the stress that we can experience.
Yeah, and I think if we look at our little ones, we can see what happens when they get out of their routine, and it's, you know, meltdown central, tantrums left, right. So, you know, we definitely can thrive from that routine, from certain eating times, certain bedtimes, which brings us to one of the simplest things, well, maybe not so simple right now, But one of the simplest and cheapest things you can do to support weight loss is to get a good night's sleep and aim for if you can get those 8 hours. So it's free. I know right now you might be tossing and turning, you know, thinking about things, stressing. And we'll talk about ways to reduce stress in a few minutes. But setting the time up so that at least you have that amount of time in bed or a little bit longer, so that window is sacred. So I'm going to bed at 10 o'clock, for example, and I'm going to set my alarm for 6, or I might go to bed, you know, at 9:30 and read for half an hour, and lights are out at 10. So I know I have that 8 hour window to get a good chunk of time to sleep. But that sets up our hormones for weight loss. It makes our insulin work better, our cortisol, the stress hormone, balanced. If you're not getting enough sleep either, you release a hormone called ghrelin. We've talked about it before. I like to think of it as the gremlin hormone. So it makes you feel hungry, and the gremlins are kind of just talking to you and saying, let's get more carbs, let's get more sugar. You're tired, you're still hungry, even though you actually aren't physiologically hungry. It overpasses that or overrides it, and your body thinks it's hungry and it's so strong, and you reach for the carbs and the sugar. Also because you're tired, right? And those are a quick source of energy. So sleep is key for weight loss as a foundational piece. And then even if you're sleeping, you're going to have more energy and motivation to cook, to exercise, to eat better, to make healthier choices. So right now, and you know, we've done an episode on sleep, so you can listen back to episode 4, but really coming up with a bedtime routine that works for you. So, you know, possibly turning the news off, you know, as early as possible, and having some ways to unwind with potentially a bath or a yoga nidra meditation, having a nice sleepy time tea or Tulsi tea is great to calm the nervous system and get you ready for bedtime. So it's figuring out what's going to calm you down to help quiet the mind, if you will. So even journaling, we've talked about before, can be really beneficial. But Tony, do you have any tips for sleep hygiene, especially right now where I'm sure it's an issue?
For sure. And that's even where, especially as it's getting lighter out, I don't know about, you know, you guys in Toronto or any of you out there in Calgary, especially with the time change, you know, having longer days, that's even where it's more important to kind of dim the lights, and really kind of get into that routine as you know, the night comes on, so that, you know, we're not, we don't just keep on going. And even, you know, maybe having a routine of having some tea, a sleepy time tea or a Tulsi tea. Oftentimes sleepy time teas have things like skullcap and passion flower, lavender and oats that are really calming and relaxing for the nervous system. I definitely even know some people who have more of the sleepy time teas during the day too, when they're having a really stressful day too. So that's even something to consider. Or, doing things like yoga, doing meditation, and even looking at, emotional freedom technique or tapping can be really fantastic as well to reduce some of that stress and allow you to be able to fall asleep and stay asleep better too.
For sure. Yeah. Those of you who haven't heard of tapping or emotional freedom technique. So it's a very simple exercise where you're actually using your fingers, the tips of your second and third finger, and tapping on different meridian points on your face, neck, and under the arms while you're saying certain statements. So it's while you're acknowledging your emotions, and then it turns more into like a positive, and it helps you release some of those thoughts and emotions. So you can do some free tapping sessions if you go to Jessica Ortner's website. We'll link to it in the show notes. She has different ones to do before bed, for when you wake up, when you're feeling stressed and overwhelmed. But I find some people really resonate with it, especially if they're not into, well, you can still do it if you're into meditation. It works great too. But some people like the act of actually physically tapping, and that gets them more into the relaxation phase. They might get anxious if they're sitting and meditating. For some people, that's really difficult to do. So tapping may be a good option for you as well. And then I have a lot of people talk to me about, you know, oh, I drink tea at night and I have to wake up and pee and then I'm awake. Well, I usually just tell people then to steep the tea bag in half a mug of water. So you make it really concentrated. And you don't have to drink as much liquid. So yeah, like Tony mentioned, the sleepy time tea is great. I like the Tulsi tea or the chamomile with lavender. But these are all great ways to get a good night's sleep and to lower stress hormones. Because if our cortisol is high, we're going to put weight on in the midsection. We're going to have blood sugar dips. We're going to crave sugar and carbohydrates and be anxious and feel overreactive to things. So hopefully that gives you some tips on how to deal with some of the insomnia right now and the heightened stress and anxiety. You could always get we've talked about the Dutch test, the dried urine test for comprehensive hormones to find out exactly where your cortisol levels are, what your metabolites are like, and then different herbs and specific lifestyle changes can be applied to you to help balance the stress response as well.
Yeah. What I also love about the Dutch test is it also gives us a level of melatonin.
I know, that's
great. So
we can
kind of look at you know, if your natural production of melatonin is low, then we can kind of look at, you know, ways to support that too. So yeah, really nice to, sometimes it's really nice to have the tests and those numbers so that we can really make the best recommendations for each patient who comes into our office.
Definitely.
One of my other patients also let me know about, there's actually an app for tapping, the Tapping Solution app. So again, that's a nice, easy way of helping to reduce that cortisol too.
Oh, great. And I'll check that out. Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah. Oh, and we'll definitely put a link to that as well on our show notes. Another great way of reducing stress and that has a lot of research behind it is exercise or physical activity. Not only is it great for helping to build muscle, like I've talked about in our previous episode, to really kind of keep our testosterone and bone health supported. It's really fantastic for our mental health. Really regular exercise is really important for dopamine. It's also important for our reducing cortisol, really important for focus, concentration, mood. It is important to watch out to make sure that you're not over exercising though. I've talked before about how, you know, over exercising for more than needed longer periods of time or doing more higher intensity exercise can actually not only increase cortisol or stress hormones that we want to keep down, but it will stimulate your appetite too. And that's really kind of opposite of what we want to do when we're really wanting to tackle our weight and metabolism.
I don't know if you remember that commercial, Tony. It was back probably when I was a teenager in my 20s, but there was a woman who went out for a long run and she comes inside and she's all sweaty. She opens up the fridge and you think she's just grabbing, like that was the time when everybody was having bottled water in their fridge. So you're like, oh, she's just going to get a bottle of water. But there was a slice of cake in the fridge and she just grabbed it with her hand and started eating it right after her run. So sometimes people, you know, I have people say, oh yeah, I go for a run so then I can enjoy that croissant after. So it's really looking at, okay, if you're exercising, that's great, but what is the reward? For me, the reward is the feel-good effects. And if you make it that food or that treat consistently every time, you know, the occasional time's not the end of the world, but you're counteracting the benefits of the exercise.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And I mean, especially if you can kind of keep up that exercise, then great. But when there's challenges of, you know, interruptions in your usual routine for exercise and physical activity, that's where you really need to look at shifting your eating habits. And if we're really wanting to look at physical activity or movement or exercise that helps with stress management, something to really consider is more low intensity activities. You know, things that combine breathing and relaxation, you know, things like yoga, qigong, tai chi, or even different workouts like Pilates or bar workouts or different weight training workouts. And thankfully, more and more of those are available online too.
Yeah, it's great. I really like, if you're looking for a free weight workout where it's actually just like repetitions, it's not too intense, but you know you're building muscle, is the Heather Robertson YouTube channel. So she has a variety of workouts with free weights, with exercise balls, with exercise bands. So if you're starting out, you could look to those. You should always consult with your trainer, your physiotherapist, your osteopath, if you have any injuries, just to make sure the movements are right for you. But that could be a good starting point. And a lot of local gyms, yoga studios are offering online live streaming of different workouts. So we can link to a few of those as well.
For sure. And like we've talked about before, it could be just as simple as getting outside for a walk, or Dr. Lisa's favorite, exercise snacks.
I know they're not as good as, you know, the typical snacks, but at least it's a type of snack.
If you're missing, you know,
5 minutes, 10 minutes, yeah, you're gonna do, you know, 5 minutes of what I call low intensity burpees, because I don't jump anymore like that because my poor joints. But or your snack could be, yeah, just like a dance snack, 5-10 minutes, put on your favorite song, dance it out. I know you love to do that, Tony, too,
I love to do that. Oh, absolutely.
Do something you enjoy, or if you're doing jumping jacks or burpees, put on a song you really like, and that might pump you up
for sure. And like I said, that's really important for dopamine, which is really key for kind of really supporting our reward centers in our brain.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah, that's key too, right? Because we get a boost from certain foods and dopamine, so we crave it because it does make us feel temporarily better. But like you're saying, Tony, yeah, these exercise snacks are things that you really enjoy doing, even if it's reading a book, calling a loved one, having a nice cup of tea and savoring it. You can get that dopamine release and still feel good without reaching for, you know, the bowl of pasta or the bag of chips.
Yeah. You know, because so many of us, especially in times like these, will tend towards the emotional eating and the comfort foods, like we were talking about. There's a reason why they're called comfort foods, is because we feel better after them. They will stimulate a certain amount of dopamine and serotonin, those neurotransmitters that that make us feel happier and more content. And again, if our goal is not to, you know, gain the pandemic 15 or the quarantine 15.
That's your new, not the freshman 15, but the pandemic 15.
and I didn't make that up.
Oh, really? So you've heard it before?
I haven't
seen that. Okay, I'm not on social media.
Yeah, I have seen that. I don't know who coined the phrase, but it's definitely out there. You know, it really is about looking at asking the questions like, you know, if you're about to reach for food, to ask yourself, are you really hungry? Why is it that you're reaching for food? Why are you eating?
Mm-hmm. Could be boredom. Yeah. It could be stress eating. You know, right now a lot of us feel helpless. We have no control. And sometimes, yeah, just eating what we want to eat when we want to eat, it gives us some sense of control as well, even though, you know, there's other ways to go about that. But looking at, yeah, the triggers, and I have a little exercise I explain to patients if they're having like a trigger that sets them off for some stress eating or emotional eating. If you can, in that moment, set a timer for 5 to 10 minutes before you start eating and do something else you really love, like read 5 pages or 10 pages of a book you have on your nightstand, or watch a funny clip on YouTube, or call or email a friend, and then see if that craving is still there. And even for people that eat like after dinner, what I found really worked for me is to actually brush my teeth and floss my teeth right after dinner. And doing that, I'm like, well, you know, the minty taste kind of dulls the taste buds, so you don't really want that sweet. But then I've already put that effort in of cleaning my teeth, that I'm like, if I eat something, then I have to do that again. So it's a small, like small little hacks like that sometimes can make a difference.
That's amazing, Lisa. Like something so simple like that can make such a huge difference, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm. And especially in the throes of, I remember breastfeeding, and like, although I needed to snack a bit more at night, but like once I brushed my teeth and floss, that felt like a big win because you're so tired already at that point. So it's like, yeah, I can't do that again. That was in the throes of total exhaustion, where brushing your teeth is even tiring, right?
Oh, for sure, right? Something else that can be really useful, especially those of you out there who already like to diffuse essential oils. The citrus essential oils have a compound in it called D-limonene, and actually that has been shown to help to boost our dopamine levels so that it reduces our perception of stress. And then we're not necessarily reaching for things that are that will give us kind of that dopamine hit, and especially things like food, and but even you know, alcohol, gambling, social media, our phones, all of those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Very cool. Yeah. I'll have to try that. Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, for sure. and you know, again, another kind of pieces, you know, to look at, when you're eating, you know, eating until you're kind of like 80% full, you know, giving your body a chance to kind of catch up instead of like getting to 100% or more than 100% full. And that is, you know, a real piece of overeating too.
For sure. So eating slowly, really smelling your food, savoring your food, letting the hormones that tell you you're full be released during the meal, not just, you know, a lot of us can shovel it in, especially with young kids, and then our body doesn't have the appropriate cues at the right time. So we eat a lot more because we don't have that time for our body to say, okay, we're getting full now.
Yeah, another key piece of being really mindful is not to be eating in front of the TV or, you know, while you're on your phone, but actually sitting down, eating, especially if you're eating with your family and really connecting with them. That's not only great for, you know, kind of your mental health and preventing emotional eating, but it also has a really positive impact on our gut health and our gut microbiome that can really improve how well you're absorbing your nutrients, decrease the likelihood of kind of stimulating leaky gut or irritation in the digestive tract. You know, that was another key piece for me when looking at, you know, shifting my postpartum weight, was looking at, you know, what foods I knew already that didn't necessarily weren't the best fuel for my body. There are foods that I know that my body does not do well with and can create some digestive symptoms most of the time, but sometimes I can tolerate them okay. But I just know that they're not the best for me. And for me specifically, like that's dairy, that's wheat, that's corn. So even again, just getting into the habit and being up the mindset to avoid those food sensitivities and intolerances that can slow down metabolism and can just slow down the whole function and processing of the body. So that's a really key piece to look at. If you know you have food sensitivities or intolerances, but you're like sneaking them in, it may be time to really look at avoiding them more or just completely eliminating them.
For sure. And then eating those foods will definitely contribute or worsen leaky gut. And you can listen to leaky gut. We discussed that more in episode 8, but that can increase inflammation, throw off your immune function, have you have more aches and pains in your body, headaches, fatigue. So you want to make sure you do what you can to have appropriate digestive function. That's going to impact the whole body and your ability to lose weight. They're even looking at different types of gut bacteria and how that may influence the ability to lose weight, but they also help our body detoxify estrogens and other harmful substances as well. So that's a whole other topic we could spend hours on, I'm sure. So we won't go any deeper into it today unless you think we should.
Maybe. Oh, no, no. I think, well, you know, episode 8, and I'm sure we'll be talking about more about our guts, you know, in gut health in future episodes too.
For sure. Yeah. And I'll just briefly touch on my my postpartum experience. Well, I did lose weight pretty quickly because I was breastfeeding a lot and pumping a lot and just totally exhausted. So it wasn't a healthy way to lose weight. And then I started to gain weight when I stopped breastfeeding because I kept eating the amount that I was eating when I was breastfeeding. And I did that for a few months and said, wait a minute, something's not right here. So I just really had to reevaluate, okay, do I need to eat before I go to bed? Do I need 3 snacks a day? Do I need these large portion sizes? So I really started to tone that down and cut out the snacking. And then my weight started to normalize again. So, you know, we get into these routines and habits based on different seasons of our life in pregnancy, breastfeeding with young kids, but it's just stepping back and reevaluating, okay, can I have a smaller meal? Can I cut cut out a snack here or there. Doesn't sound like much, but it adds up if it's something you're doing every single day.
For sure. And while right now may feel a little bit overwhelming to really kind of overhaul all of the behaviors around your food, again, just start with one at a time. Start slow. Look at what you're doing. Start with that and really kind of recognizing some of the habits or lack of routine you may be in. And start small. Pick one thing to either add in or take away. A healthy habit that you could add in and a not so healthy habit that you can take away, and just build on it from there.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah. And a lot of people kind of know one major thing they need to change or one habit they need to add in. It's like they know, okay, I got to stop snacking in front of the TV or drinking 3 glasses of wine every night. So you have that innate knowledge. So pick one or two things. And like Tony said, just make the change and you'll be well ahead of the game.
Absolutely. That kind of segues nicely into my mama must have.
Can I go ahead and talk about that? Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. And so definitely, like I said, I was like reaching for, my first instinct was to go for some of those snacks and treats that I really like. And I kind of bought all of them. And then it's like, well, wait a minute, do I really need to eat all these things? So slowly made my way through them. And now I'm really looking at, instead of, just picking up again, those sweet treats that I always like that have sugar and those empty calories. If I am looking at having a sweet treat every once in a while, I'm really now focusing on those sweet treats that don't have any sugar in them. It includes my hemp protein power balls the recipe was on a previous episode note, so you can kind of search through that. But now I'm, if I really want a nice treat, I like to look at, there's certain products that have stevia and other sweeteners in it. The Zevia sodas and teas are really nice as a nice kind of treat to have that doesn't have any sugar in it. It is sweetened with stevia. And I like, I find that the flavors of them are good. I know some people avoid things with stevia because it has a chemical taste, but I don't find that those drinks do. I'm also going to link, I forgot to check the name of the company, the local company in Calgary that makes these amazing pumpkin seed chocolate cups.
That sounds good.
They're so delicious, and they're nut-free, gluten-free, dairy-free, and sugar-free as well. They're amazing. And again, not something to have every day, but, a treat once in a while, I definitely reach for those. I think their name is Dwarf Stars. I'm so sorry, but I will post, look on our show notes. You'll be able to find those because they're amazing.
Well, those are some great options. Yeah, there's so many different things out there now where you get a little bit of that sweetness without the blood sugar effect. So that's a really great mama must have. So thanks for sharing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then do you want to share a super mom moment that you had this past week, Tony?
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of this because, and maybe it was a bit of a mama mess up before. I remember listening to you talk about in a previous episode, Lisa, about how you managed to stock up on your toilet paper at Costco. And then each time I looked at getting more toilet paper, I could not find any. So this morning I had my toilet paper win. I was getting groceries, went in the morning, headed to the toilet paper aisle, thought it was completely empty because it looked almost completely empty. But I saw there was 4 packages of toilet paper still there.
How is that possible?
I know. How it was possible was because it was $17. It was toilet paper that wasn't
on
sale.
You got to do. Yeah.
I've never bought toilet paper that wasn't on sale before. I did it today. And there was definitely a bit of relief there. There was a lot of other emotions. I don't think I've ever been so emotional buying toilet paper before. Aww, but
it's the small wins these days, really. It really is about the small wins. So
absolutely.
That's a super bum moment. Now you're going to have, you said it, how many rolls? It was 30, I think you said.
Yeah, I think it was a big pack of 30 rolls. So now I'm stocked up. That's not in the back of my mind like it has been for the past over a week.
You can sell them for $5 a roll and make a profit. We're not going to do that, but.
No.
I know, just joking.
How about you, Lisa? Do you have a mama mess up to share?
I do. There was one that happened a few weeks ago when Stuart was still in preschool. So I know that preschool, you know, it's closed right now. A lot of schools and daycares are, but normally I'm really good about hiding my phone. So I bring a little side purse with me when I go pick him up. I get him in the stroller and we're good to go, or he might walk partway home or we'll go to the park. But this day, for some reason, I didn't bring my purse. So I had my phone in my jacket pocket. And when I bent down to try to get him, help get him ready in his snow pants and boots, I took the phone out and set it on one of their little cubby holes in the preschool. And Stuart saw the phone and he wanted it in that moment. And I was like, I'm not going to give you the phone. Like, we need to get ready. You're not watching the phone. And he had a major meltdown. I think his biggest one yet. And a lot of people had already left preschool. It was a couple of the teachers and maybe about 5 kids, but it was the end of the day and, you know, everybody's a bit distraught. There's been overstimulation with noise, but it is what it is. It's normal and it happens all the time, I'm sure. But I guess it turned to be a mama, like a super mom moment, because I think I handled it as well as I could. Like, I stayed firm. I told him I wasn't going to give him the phone. He still was freaking out, crying, trying to grab it. We were probably there for about 10, 15 minutes. It felt like forever. And that's a long time for a tantrum.
Oh, no.
I know. And eventually he calmed down and I asked the preschool workers, I was like, you know, what do you guys do when kids have tantrums? They're like, just what you did. Like, you still held your ground. You listened to him. You let him validate, like you validated his feelings. I didn't tell him to stop. And she said, and then another thing you can do when you get home and he's calmed down a bit more is you can just have a conversation around what happened and talk about, you know, you looked really upset and explain why you didn't give him the phone. So I said, okay, well, I guess that turned into a super mom moment, but mental note, always hide the phone. And we don't give him the phone a lot, but the odd time he'll get to pick a show on it. He knows how to open up YouTube Kids and Netflix. It's amazing at how young they can start to figure those things out. But yeah.
Oh, so for sure.
It was tough.
Well, you definitely found a silver lining for that that mess up. So good job. It totally turned into a super mom moment, Lisa. So
thanks, Tony.
Thanks, everyone out there, for joining us today. If you have any comments or suggestions or questions for us, please visit our website, connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We have our show notes on our website, perimenopausalmamas.com. We'd love for you to subscribe to our podcast, and please leave us a review and 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too.
Have a great week, everyone.
Take care.
See you next time. Take care.